try to fly? Is it so high? We don't think so. We don't think so. All we looked at, all we set back. Can we fake him, emulate him? Time is breaking, changing, faking. Grind us up now, not too hard now. Features so fine, rouge and eyeliner. Things I fancy, just like Nancy. Fashion's altar, often falter. Cripes all's out now, no more fights now. Makeup's taking lots of shipping on my eyelash. You sure it don't clash? Slimline trousers, facial powder, sliding my mind. You sure there's no lines? Eye me up now, pamper me now. Please don't pass by.
Hi, you are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, and this is Ebony Spectrum.
Hello, America! Thank you so very much. On January 5th, 2021, the people of Georgia did an amazing thing. They sent a black kid who grew up in public housing and the Jewish son of an immigrant to the United States Senate in one fell swoop. And among those Georgians was my then 82-year-old mother. She grew up in Waycross, Georgia. Do you know where that is? It's Waycross, Georgia. She grew up in Waycross, Georgia, where she picked other people's cotton and other people's tobacco. But because this is America, the 82-year-old hands that used to pick somebody else's cotton and somebody else's tobacco picked her youngest son to be a United States Senator. This is my America. Thank you, Mom. Thank you, Georgia. Thank you, America, for raising your voice and using your vote. A vote is a kind of prayer for the world we desire for ourselves and for our children, and our prayers are stronger when we pray together. And so together we flipped the Senate, held the House, and we sent Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to the White House. Together we vaccinated our citizens, we fortified our cities and our towns, and we stood by our small businesses. Together we set out to heal the land. A nation besieged by a deadly pandemic and beset by the awful and divisive rhetoric of a man too small for the office entrusted him or the task set before him. The day after my January 5th election, he instigated an insurrection, a violent assault on our nation's capital and the peaceful transfer of power, all driven by the big lie. But behind the big lie was an even bigger lie. It is the lie that this increasingly diverse American electorate does not get to determine the future of the country. The lie and the logic of January 6th is a sickness. It is a kind of cancer that then metastasized into dozens of voter suppression laws all across our country. And we must be vigilant tonight because these anti-democratic forces are at work right now in Georgia and all across our country. And the question is, who will heal the land? And so here we are, America. Are you ready? Are you ready to stand up in this moral moment? Stand up for the best in the American covenant. Elections are about the character of a country. And we must decide again. We are the latest generation of Americans who get to decide what kind of country we want to be. And we must choose between the promise of January 5th and the peril of January 6th. A nation that embraces all of us or just some of us. Donald Trump's America is the America of January 6th. People who have no vision traffic in division. He does not know how to lead us, and so he wants to divide us. America, make no mistake, Donald Trump is a plague on the American conscience. He is a clear and present threat to the precious covenant we share with one another. And yes, I saw him holding the Bible and endorsing a Bible as if it needed his endorsement. He should try reading it. It says, do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with your God. He should try reading it. It says, love your neighbor as yourself. It says, inasmuch as you've done it unto the least of these, you have done it also unto me. I choose the American covenant. E pluribus unum, out of many one. I choose January 5th. I choose a nation that provides a path for ordinary people and gives every child a chance. And that's Joe Biden's America. And he's been fighting for it for more than a half century. President Biden, America is so much better because of you, a true patriot who has always put the people first. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Joe. But I'll tell you something else. Not only is that Joe Biden's America, that's Kamala Harris's America. She was leading with Joe Biden when we expanded the child tax credit, cutting child poverty in America nearly in half. We ought to renew it. She cast a tie-breaking vote for my bill, capping the cost of insulin to no more than $35 per month for seniors. We ought to extend it to everybody. Together we passed an infrastructure bill, bolstered American manufacturing and clean energy, an investment in the house that we all share together. And I've got news for you, we are just getting started. Are you ready to win this election? Kamala Harris and Tim Walz represent the new way forward. We're not going back. We're not going back because we are the United States of America. We always dream about the future. And so forward, on women's reproductive rights because we believe that a patient's room is too small and cramped a space for a woman, her doctor, and the United States government. That's too many people in the room. Forward on worker rights. Because most people do not mind working. They just want to share in the prosperity that they are creating for others. Forward on voting rights. Forward on affordable housing and access to health care. We are moving forward. And so I'm inspired tonight. I'm inspired by all of you. I'm inspired by the resilience of an American spirit that has rebounded from the pandemic and is holding at bay the forces that are trying to divide us. And I'm inspired tonight by the memory of my late father, a preacher and a junk man. Monday through Friday, he lifted old broken cars and put them on the back of an old rig. But on Sunday morning, the man who lifted broken cars lifted broken people whom other people had discarded and told them that they were God's somebody. My dad discovered strength in the broken places, a power made perfect in weakness. And so I'm convinced tonight that we can lift the broken even as we climb. I'm convinced tonight that we can heal sick bodies. We can heal the wounds that divide us. We can heal a planet in peril. We can heal the land. And in a strange way, the pandemic taught us how. A contagious airborne disease means that I have a personal stake in the health of my neighbor. If she's sick, I may get sick also. Her health care is good for my health. I'm just trying to tell you that we are as close in our humanity as a cough. I need my neighbor's children to be okay so that my children will be okay. I need all of my neighbor's children to be okay. Poor inner city children in Atlanta and poor children of Appalachia. I need the poor children of Israel and the poor children of Gaza. I need Israelis and Palestinians. I need those in the Congo.
Of Texas, let's listen in.
Our nation will hire a president, a commander in chief, and leader of the free world. So let's compare their resumes, shall we? One candidate worked at McDonald's while she was in college at an HBCU. HU. The other was born with a silver spoon in his mouth and helped his daddy in the family business. Housing discrimination, that is. She became a career prosecutor while he became a career criminal. With 34 felonies, 2 impeachments, and 1 porn star to prove it. As an elected district attorney general, and senator, She's always worked for one client, the people. Meanwhile, he's a 78-year-old, lifelong predator, fraudster, and cheat known for inciting violent mobs. Listen, y'all, he's only looked out for one person, himself. As women are dying, he is bragging about overturning Roe. And y'all know I come from Texas. And right now in Texas, come on, Texas. But right now in Texas, they want to institute the death penalty. That is a problem. While Kamala Harris is fighting for our reproductive rights to be restored. She is also the leader we need on the global stage. She helped secure the release of Americans wrongfully detained in Russia. At the same time, he cozies up to his role model, Vladimir Putin, and MAGA holds legislation hostage here at home, critical resources to secure the border, military aid to Ukraine, and even the farm bill. She's lived the American dream while he's been America's nightmare. America, looking at the two choices before you, who would you hire? Donald Trump? Or Kamala Harris? Kamala Harris has a resume. Donald Trump has a rap sheet. She presides over the Senate while he keeps our national secrets next to his thinking chair. Y'all know what I said that other time. In Mar-a-Lago. While Donald Trump wants to put our 1787 Constitution through his Project 2025 paper shredder and make every day January 6th, Kamala Harris is fighting to fulfill the promise of America. In the real world, this wouldn't even be close. But this election is. Don't make a mistake. We are the underdogs in this fight. Even though there is only one person qualified, only one person who's done the work and who has delivered the results. And she needs you. She needs your one vote this November. Can we count on you? Some of you know a little bit of my history, some of you don't, so let me tell you. I was a public defender. I did criminal defense as well as practiced civil rights law for almost two decades. I know a good prosecutor when I see one. Kamala Harris is the kind of prosecutor we long for in the cases like those of Breonna Taylor. Yeah. She was the first attorney general in the nation to order that her officers wear body cams, and she started the Back on Track program to reduce recidivism. Listen, y'all, she did all these things because she genuinely cares about people. She sees each person as just that, a person, not a statistic. She's proven that since the first day she stepped into a courtroom and said what y'all already heard Hillary say, I did not copy off of her speech. I just want y'all to know. She walked into that courtroom and said, Kamala Harris, for the people. And she meant that. Many of you know her credentials, but what I love about Kamala Harris goes beyond her resume. It's that she sees the humanity in everyone. She's the only candidate in this race who is capable of empathy. When I first got to Congress, I wasn't sure I made the right decision. The Chaos Caucus couldn't elect a speaker, and the Oversight Committee was unhinged. I was going through all of this when I visited the Vice President's residence for the first time. As I approached Vice President Harris for our official photo, she turned to me and asked, "What's wrong?" Mind you, we'd never met, but she saw right through me. She saw the distress. I immediately began crying. And the most powerful woman in the world wiped my tears and listened. It's so hard for me to tell this story. She then said, among other things, "You are exactly where God wants you. Your district chose you because they believe in you, and so do I." The next month, I went viral for the first of many times to come for hitting Republicans with a dose of their own medicine. That brief but impactful interaction gave me my legislative legs, and I've been running ever since. The question before us is, will a vindictive, vile villain violate voters' vision for a better America or not? I hear alliterations are back in style. We deserve better. We deserve a president who can be a bright light in a sea of darkness. One who will put us, who will pull us forward, because we won't go back. Amanda Gorman said it best: there's always light if only we are brave enough to see it. If only we are brave enough to be it. Kamala Harris showed me that light. And America, when she is our president, together we will shine as that beacon of hope and freedom around the world once more. God bless y'all.
Has the U.S.
Yes, I told you we're going to have a soft landing. We're going to have a soft landing. My policies are working. Start right that way, okay?
Yeah, bitches. That's basically what he's saying. I agree. But yesterday, he was really fiery. Okay, so the plan was released yesterday. Harris-Waltz economic plan features new tax cuts, housing incentives, and price caps. Okay, so Vice President Harris unveiled a new package of economic proposals that she would prioritize in her first 100 days in office. So these are things we can hold her to account for, right? In addition to everything else, groceries. Harris will work with Congress to advance the first ever federal ban on corporate price gouging. So everybody complaining about eggs and milk, that ain't the government. That's these companies taking advantage. Gas, that's these companies taking advantage, which they always do, by the way. Oil can be down, and they'll keep the prices up. Okay, they have the ability to lower the prices, which is why if we are strategic with our dollars and let all of them know and maybe only get gas from one place and let the other ones know, hey, this can happen to you too if you don't get it together. But she's going to work with Congress to pass a bill. Now, Republicans, get your act together, or how about we show up in November and vote the Republican assholes out? Okay.
Yes.
And this would include clear rules so that corporations can't unfairly exploit consumers to run up excessive corporate profits on grocery, staples, etc. And she also will investigate and penalize violations. I love this. Mm. The Harris administration would also take an aggressive regulatory approach to propose mergers and consolidations among the biggest food producers, because you know they be doing that too, mergers and acquisitions, and then squeezing out the little guys. And like my fresh Samantha, I still don't know what happened to her. She got jacked up. She got merged and then sat down.
And regulation really went out of the window under the Trump administration. They gutted so many of our regulatory agencies. And so you look up now and it just feels like, man, every week there's a food recall. What's going on? The lettuce, the this, the that. And it's like, yes. Because the FDA can't check everything. They don't have the resources to check everything like they used to. So, yeah, I love that. This is what government is for, leaning into regulation. That's why I vote for y'all, because I'm not ready to leave America to the devices of just corporate America and just hope that they have our best interests in mind. And especially that stuff about the price gouging, CEOs making bank. We're not even seeing employees' wages going up. So you can't even tell me that this is a function of like, well, we got to pay $15 minimum wage or whatever. That's not why it's going up. It's going up and people still making that $7.50 an hour. So, yeah, look into this.
Yes, I love what you're saying here, because this is what government's supposed to do. Okay, they also have, they're going to be in the first 100 days looking at affordable housing and rent. Harris' plan would help cash-strapped renters by blocking data firms from hiking lease rates. And by preventing Wall Street investors from buying homes in bulk to resell at a premium. We know, was it BlackRock? One of them. Buying up all residential housing and then pushing it back out, or all of the shenanigans. Trump is one of those real estate people that did exactly that, and also discriminated against people from being in his housing. His daddy did that too. I'm gonna say less about that. The Harris plan will also call for the United States to construct 3 million new housing units. This is the government now, not people. 3 million new housing over the next 4 years. In order to facilitate that, she will call for new tax incentives for builders who construct starter homes. This is, and some of y'all are in this business. This is beautiful. Oh, she's not for us. Yeah, stop it. Any changes to the tax code will require congressional approval, of course, and depend heavily on which party controls the House and Senate. That is a nod to you to get your ass out and vote for your Senate and your representative, and make sure you vote a lot of you, getting a lot of you to the polls to do this. Yes.
And this is one of those things too that benefits Black people disproportionately, because we often do more renting than owning of homes. When we buy a home, we're often the first time home buyer. Many times we don't have the ability to rely on generational wealth and someone to come in and like pay our down payment for us and stuff like some other people within the country are able to do. So like all of these incentives are helping us to be able to establish generational wealth, establish ownership, establish better credit and stuff like that. And so like these are things that benefit us. And the reason I want to highlight that is because there'll be people out there to say like, well, what this going to do for Black people? Where the Black? And it's like, just because they didn't write Black on the name don't mean it's not going to help us more than it's going to help other people.
Period. To your point, there will also be in this plan, there's also in this plan, she's expanded to provide working families who have paid their rent on time. So that's key. So those of you who have not paid your rent because you were during the pandemic and they let you not pay your rent and then you aren't caught up and then they're saying, run me my check, you won't be eligible. Much like some of you who were in forbearance with your student loan debt and wondering why you didn't get it forgiven. There is a benefit to paying things on time and making sure you're a good steward of the very, if you have little funds, being a good steward of those little funds pay off in the end. Making sure your credit is good so that you are ready for the windfall and you're ready for the increase. So I'm saying this now, this may go into effect 8 months, not make sure you're paying on time the next 8 months to a year. Like, be vigilant, because that's going to help you, especially now that they're going to be taking into account rent payments as well to your credit score. And here's the key. She's also, for people who've been paying their rent on time for 2 years and buying their first home, the government is going to be given $25,000 in down payment assistance. Mm. That's huge. That's huge. If we're talking 3%, you could buy a nice big house with $25,000.
Yeah. And that's, and that's lot of us.
With more generation support, more generous support for first generation homeowners. Mm. This is, come on. This is so you get even more, but you.
That's us. You know what I mean? Like a lot of that is us, man. And they're doing something. I said this a long time ago, but they're doing something that I really love, which is don't write it in the law as we doing this for Black people, because then we have the Heritage Foundation, which specifically seeks out plans that are like racially like centered on like we want to help address all the wrongs that have been done to Black people. And then they sue it, and then it goes to the damn Supreme Court, and this Supreme Court immediately shuts it down because they like, nah, we not helping Black people. That's racist. So like stuff like this that is written in a way that is coded to help Black people in a disproportionate manner, that's exactly what I want to see them do, because I don't want it to get challenged in court and just like fall apart.
We got to be smart. We got to be smarter. We got to be less emotional and not. Some of y'all need to put your phones down and your microphones and your cameras. I'm just saying, some of y'all cousins, maybe not y'all, because I feel like this audience, they listen more than they talk. Right. But some of y'all's cousins be out there just running their mouths, sounding real stupid. We're going to get to that. I can't wait. Also, healthcare costs. The Harris administration seeks to expand Biden administration's landmark $35 cap on insulin for Medicare recipients to cover insulin for all Americans, not just that, not just the elderly. So in addition to the plan yesterday with the new pricing on a lot of this diabetes drugs all of this, they're also going to cap insulin. They want to cap insulin for all Americans. And the plan calls for cracking down on pharmaceutical companies who block competition and have abusive practices. And abusive practices by pharmaceutical middlemen. You know, the ones with the suitcases to come in and make the little deals. And doctors, y'all, come on. Don't be in the bag for the pharmaceutical companies. Be in the bag for the people.
They gave y'all some free pens.
Yeah, come on. Or trips right. to Hawaii. Come on. I know they say they're not doing that anymore, but stop it. Stop it. And finally, tax cuts. They're going to restore the expanded child tax credits that were first introduced during COVID. Longstanding goal of the Biden administration, and one that Harris says she will take up if she's elected as president. She will go one step further, she said, and propose expanded tax relief for up to $6,000 for families with a newborn. So, yes, she's not just leaning into the women with the single with cats. She's saying more. And finally, I feel like this is a checkmate today. U.S. officials, and this is not part of the Harris-Walz plan, but I think it is. They say that the Mideast mediators are preparing to implement a ceasefire deal. That's happening. They said Friday they're preparing a ceasefire deal for this 10-month Israel-Hamas war. And if that happens before November... checkmate, motherfucker. Checkmate.
And the other thing I would like to highlight here is that the other guys haven't put out a single proposal or policy for what they're going to do for the economy. Now, they've complained about it the whole way. They've been lying about it.
And lied about it. Can you say they lied about it, too?
They've been lying about it. They've been complaining about it. But when asked, literally, when there was a press conference where Donald Trump was supposed to unveil his... his economic agenda, he spent the whole time complaining about Kamala Harris. So just understand, when y'all are vetting the candidates, this is what we're supposed to be. Everybody that wanted to see this, we knew this was coming. The DNC was coming. You knew she was going to unveil policy proposals. Just understand the lack of policy proposals from the other side also is a notch against them.
Facts. Well, let's even go one step further. Last week, I think Trump at one of his press conferences talked about removing taxes on tips. Mm-hmm. And Vice President and soon to be President Harris said this week she was going to do the same thing. Well, there's a big difference. When Trump says tax on tips, his tips the black guy who tips.com. His tips are not like ours. Them tips are not like our tips, okay? As a matter of fact, we have a clip making the distinction between Trump's removal of tax on tips and Vice President or President Harris Walz's tax on tips. Play the clip.
Kamala Harris has said no tax on tips. Donald Trump has said no tax on tips. What's the difference? Kamala Harris has specifically said no tax on tips for service or hospitality workers. Donald Trump's policy is different. Ted Cruz is writing that policy, and it pertains to tips or bonuses. So if you earn $1 million and 500 grand of that is a bonus, then you don't pay tax on that 500 grand. That's why the distinction is important. Kamala is talking about those workers who need a break most. Trump is talking about his fucking buddies. The two candidates can have a great idea and it might sound fantastic, but when you dig a little deeper, one is bullshit and one is real. It's up to you to decide.
Black guy who tips, Roderick Morrow. You actually tip. I think people should be paid a living wage who serve. Right. And they shouldn't have to divvy up tips, and it shouldn't even be a thing. But when he said that, I said, yeah, you know, when we won the Pulitzer at the Daily News, we got a check. Mm-hmm. That check and a bonus. The bonus was taxed. I said, where's the money? Do you know what I'm saying? Anybody that gets bonuses, the tax rate on a bonus is so much more than it is on your regular money. That's what Trump is going to. And if it's $1 million, you know, the Wall Street crowd, they get them bonuses all the time. He's going to consider that a tip.
Right. Of course, there's always a catch with this bull. Like, with them, it's always a catch. And so, yeah, I'm not surprised that that it applies to bonuses and try to sneak that one in there. Because, you know, that's that. A lot of times bonuses are taxed at a higher rate, but that's because they're bonuses. You know, like, and it's for people that already got paid a living wage at the job they have, and it's like, oh, here's a nice bonus for you. So yeah, to put a difference between that and to cap that for sure, because if not, you know they're gonna abuse the hell out of that. Pay me $1 and the rest is a bonus, you know.
My days are cooler, nights are warmer, and I put the blame on you.
She set the standard in California. Think of this. If you steal $950 or less, they're going to leave you alone. They can't be bothered. So you see criminals going into stores with a little computer, adding it up, everything they've stolen. They want to stay under the $950, but they don't get prosecuted for above that. The only one that gets prosecuted is somebody who would talk about the unfair election. They get prosecuted. We're a nation in decline. We're going down the drain. We bring in lots of tar, loads of it. We dump it in Houston and they refine it. We have pure stuff. We have the best and we have the most right under our feet. It's liquid gold and we're going to use it and we're going to reduce our deficit. We're going to reduce our debt. And we're going to reduce your taxes. If you'd like to go from here to, let's say, Washington to look after we fix the Capitol up and make it safe again, which will take approximately, like, quickly, what would happen if we had a war? We won't, with me, but you will have World War III, I believe, without me, but we won't have. But what would happen if we did? He said, we're weird. The JD and I are weird. I think we're extremely normal people. Which, like you, exactly like.
That I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today.
Well, smart to go to a critical state.
Yep.
Much more disciplined message needed. I mean, I've been through this twice. And you want to go to your, you want to go to these places and you want to have a simple message that the media has to cover. Instead, he gives them a gigantic smorgasbord. Some of it is written into a speech draft, but apparently some of it is just ad hoc. And they get to pick and choose. And who thinks that the dominant media in this country is going to pick the thing that is best productive for him in getting votes. They're going to pick out something like he just said, casting aspersions on Kamala Harris or President Biden. So, yes, you want to do this. You want to go to critical states. He's going later this week to Arizona, critical battleground state, to talk about immigration. But in order to force the media to cover your message, you need to be disciplined, focused, and short.
It's not about forcing the, quote, dominant media. I mean, Karl Rove has said it himself. Brett Hume said it himself. Gerard Baker at the Wall Street Journal said it himself. The Wall Street Journal editorial pages said it themselves. This is not some, I know anti Trumpers would like to say, well, this is about the mainstream media. No, this is Donald Trump's own people, Donnie, are saying this is a disastrous message. It's a disastrous campaign. They even talk about his acceptance speech. The second half of his acceptance speech was a long, rambling diatribe. He had America there with him and completely let it go. That's their words, not the, quote, dominant media, not the New York Times editorial page. And that thing yesterday, I don't care who was covering it, that was just weird. What did I say? Insurrectionists, weirdos, and freaks, man. I don't know where that fit on that scale, but that was just strange. And
those people seemed uncomfortable.
He looks like one was doing the George H.W. Bush right. Checking after my lunch. Watch. Yeah, exactly.
The contrast of what we just sat through, and he looks like a loser. It looks like he's kind of going through the motions. And the other thing, Joe, you and I talked about this last week. They keep saying pivot to the issues. You don't have crime as an issue anymore. You know, violent crimes are down 24%. You don't have the economy. We don't have to tick off every metric of the economy, which has gone great. And even immigration, illegal border crossings were lowest last month since 2019. So they don't have these grand issues to sit behind. So you have both style and substance on the negative side of the equation. But more than anything, I want to go back to that word feelings. He feels like a... I almost used the bad F-bomb.
You don't do that.
It feels like a
don't
loser.
Don't do that.
A loser. It feels that way.
Well, I mean, and on the issues, Mika, why doesn't he talk about illegal border crossings? Because they're down. Because they're down lower now than they were when he left office. Now, when Joe Biden was there and he didn't always respond to everything, he could say it. He knows now. He hears Kamala Harris now talking about how he compares unfavorably on illegal border crossings, how violent crime is lower now than it was when Donald Trump left office. Right now, I just don't know that he has anywhere to go.
And by the way, sorry, Mika, on the immigration question, Kamala Harris has a line that President Biden never uses, which is Donald Trump killed the legislation that will fix the problem. I will sign it.
There
That's
you
her
go.
Line.
Yep. And it's kind of obliterates anything that they wanted to say. In the category of there he goes again, here's another thing Donald Trump said yesterday at the manufacturing plant in the city of York, Pennsylvania. Take a look.
We don't need lectures on the economy from a candidate pushing communist price controls. Kamala has no idea what the hell she's doing. Her father is a Marxist professor, and I believe he taught her well. You know, he's a Marxist professor. Can you imagine? Does anyone know that? I wonder if they knew that when they did an overthrow or a coup on Joe Biden. I wonder if they knew where she comes from, where she came from, what her ideology is. Kamala is also on a regulatory jihad to shut down power plants all across America.
There you go. There you have it, Reverend Al. Kamala Harris in an administration that has watched the economy explode, go stronger than any other economy
make
in the
history.
West, make history. This so-called communist has presided over the Dow, going over 40,000 points. The stock markets are higher than they were when Donald Trump was president. Oil production higher than it was when Donald Trump was president. Our economy stronger than it was relative to the rest of the world when Donald Trump was president. And all he does is he throws out insults, attacks her father, says she's not black. Says she just figured out that she was black. Says that she's not attractive, that he's better looking than she is. This is why the pundits at Fox News and at the Wall Street Journal and other conservative outlets are being as critical of Donald Trump as they are. He's missing the message.
He's not only missing the message, he's appearing desperate. He's like a man losing a fight that just is swinging with no strategy, no training, and it makes no sense. When you look at the record, which you just outlined in terms of where the economy is under Biden and Harris, I mean, we're looking at inflation under 3%, and you're talking about a woman who has spent her life prosecuting criminals and fighting for fairness at the same time. You make this a communist and you blame her on a father who you claimed she was not black, her black father. So, I mean, the message is so convoluted that it becomes nonsensical, but it shows the desperation of Donald Trump. He can't figure out how to fight Kamala Harris because he has lost all the fight in him. He knows he's on his way down, and I think that he's just screaming and yelling and kicking while he's on his way out.
Joining me now, Florida Democratic Party Chair Nikki Fried. It's good to see you.
Good seeing you, too.
So is there any chance Florida's in play for the presidential race? Any chance?
Absolutely.
Come on.
I swear.
I heard that from Texans last night.
Well, we're a little bit more blue than Texas. But no, there's an argument to be made for a couple of reasons. One is what has happened in our state since DeSantis became governor. He's taken our state into such an extreme direction that people are tired. They're tired of the book banning. They're tired of going after our educational environment. They're tired of all of the noise that DeSantis has created. And with a Kamala Harris energy, we have 25,000 new volunteers that are throughout the entire state, from our red areas to our blue areas to our purple areas. The energy is really palpable and we feel it everywhere.
Do you have the infrastructure to use those 25,000 volunteers?
We do. Since I became chair last year, that's what we did. I burnt down the whole party and we started over. So we have now 28 staff members. We've built an extremely diligent get out the vote mechanism in every part of our state. In fact, this past year, we filled every congressional, every House, and every Senate seat. That is the first time that Florida Democrats have done that in over 30 years. There's something happening on the ground. There is a tremendous momentum shift. People are tired of the chaos, and they're ready to have balance back.
So you were here last night. I think you'd probably agree that one of the most powerful moments came on that stage. There were three separate, I think there were four people in three spotlights telling their own personal abortion stories, and I want to listen to at least one of them.
I was raped by my stepfather after years of sexual abuse. I can't imagine not having a choice. But today, that's the reality for many women and girls across the country because of Donald Trump's abortion bans. He calls it a beautiful thing. What is so beautiful about a child having to carry her parents' child?
Where I was sitting, people gasped, audibly gasped at what she had to say. She was 12 years old when her stepfather impregnated her. Do you think that in 2024, and you've got this coming up, this could be as impactful as we saw it was in 2022, even in 2020?
Absolutely. Now we're living under a 6-week abortion ban in the state of Florida. When Ron DeSantis pushed the 6-week ban, 77% of Floridians were opposed. And now we're seeing the stories coming out of women being turned away at emergency rooms, mothers taking their daughters, having similar stories that we just heard, and they're being turned away. And so we are seeing a coalition in Florida that is Democrat, Republican, and independent. Now our independents consist of about almost 1/3 of the demographic in our state. And you're seeing people frustrated and angry that this right was taken away from them. And so we are building this coalition. It needs 60% in Florida to get over the finish line. And it's pulling at 69%. It really is truly impacting every part of our state because people fundamentally do not want politicians in their bedroom. They don't want them in the classroom. They don't want them in the bedroom. And they certainly don't want them in the doctor's offices.
Is there anything that's going to happen tonight that would give you a clue of as to where this is going? I'm thinking, for example, one of the biggest races, Rick Scott, right? Mm-hmm. The sitting senator. He's got a couple of folks running against him in the primary. There was a new Suffolk University poll that showed only 35% of Florida voters have a favorable impression of him. 49% have an unfavorable opinion. Is he vulnerable? And assuming he wins tonight, I think that, you know, the Cook Political Report still lists this as likely Republican. Is it worth an investment on the Democratic side?
Without a doubt, 35% favorability. We already knew that we didn't like him, but now we hear this, so does everybody else. And so this is an opportunity for really, if the investment is there, we have great candidates that are going to come. One is going to come out of the primary this evening, and if one of them is Deputy
Are you sending a message?
Every day, every day. And if our candidate, Debbie Mercosell Powell, which we are the likely one to come out of it, is a strong, dynamic female who is going to be able to go after Rick Scott, who has been talking about a national abortion ban. So how can voters be going to vote for putting it back into the Florida Constitution and vote for Rick Scott, who will come to the United States Senate and try to revoke it? He's also bad on Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and with the type of demographics in our state, Rick Scott is vulnerable, and he's already taken his eyes off of Florida as he wants the leadership race, and so he's crisscrossing the state, spending money at other locations, and so don't sleep on Florida. We've got a lot of things going on that really should tip the scales for some victories.
You are nothing if not a good ambassador for your state. Nikki Fried, we appreciate you coming in and taking the time.
This was Donald Trump's pitch to black voters during his first presidential run in 2016.
What do you have to lose by trying something new like Trump? You're living in poverty. Your schools are no good. You have no jobs. 58% of your youth is unemployed. What the hell do you have to lose?
That was almost exactly 8 years ago, when it was still somewhat jarring to hear a major party candidate for president so casually paint an entire slice of the American electorate to whom he was ostensibly trying to appeal as an ugly stereotype. But Donald Trump wasn't peddling new ideas there. The racist myth around black poverty is as old as America, and Republican candidates have been exploiting it for decades in more subtle coded language. Trump just said the quiet parts out loud. When Ronald Reagan talked about welfare queens in the 1970s and 80s, he was peddling a racist myth about black women getting rich off social services because he wanted to cut funding to social welfare programs. And that was easier to do if he convinced poor white people who benefited from welfare in far greater numbers that it was actually a black problem. My next guest has dedicated his life to advocating for poor and low-wage people, whatever their color. And his latest project is an attempt to undo decades of political division sown by self-interested politicians, to reveal the truth of poverty in America, that the same system knocks everyone down, and that if they joined together, poor people would be a powerful political force. The Reverend Dr. William Barber's new book is called White Poverty: How Exposing Myths About Race and Class Can Reconstruct America's Democracy. It's a crucial and ambitious work. In it, Barber writes, quote, "The myth that says that poverty is a black issue obscures the fact that white folks are potentially the single largest base for a movement of poor people that could demand that our government address the crisis of poverty in America. As long as Americans can be divided by identity politics and cultural wedge issues, there is not a single political coalition that has the power to change how we think about poverty and thus what we can do about it. But when poor white people begin to see how their own well-being is tied up with the fortunes of other poor people, they and their allies, all who care about the common good, become an overwhelming majority of the American population," end quote. Joining me now is the aforementioned Reverend Dr. William Barber. He's the president and senior lecturer of Repairers of the Breach, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, and the author of the very important book, White Poverty: How Exposing Myths About Race and Class Can Reconstruct American Democracy. Reverend Barber, it's good to see you. You and I have been having some version of this conversation for some years now, and that this age-old American habit of dividing and pitting poor black people and poor white people against one another has been very, very effective. But if we can get away from it, we can actually see real change.
Yeah, Trump sounded just like George Wallace then, or the Southern strategy. It's an old, old trick. But the truth is, Allie, is that when you look at the 135 million poor and or low wage persons in this country, 66 million are white, 26 million are black, 68% Latinos. And in the voting booth, poor people and poor and low-wage people now make up 30% of the electorate in every state. And watch this. In battleground states like Wisconsin, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and other states, they make up over 40%. And there's not one of those battleground states, if just 5 to 10% of those who are infrequent voters were to vote, that they could not determine the outcome. Wisconsin, real quickly, the last time 20,000 votes determined the election, over a million poor and low-wage voters didn't vote. North Carolina, last election, 74,000 votes determined the margin of victory in president. Over a million poor and low-wage voters didn't vote. And the number one reason they didn't vote is the political machinery doesn't talk to them, doesn't speak to them, doesn't talk about the policies that will impact their lives.
Okay, so let's take that. Census data from the 2022 election cycle said what you just told me. Low-income Americans, poor and low-wage workers were far less likely to register to vote than Americans with an income of $100,000 or more. They are treated by voiceless in our society, right? There doesn't seem to have historically been a benefit for targeting those people as voters, except you just laid out the benefit. All those tight races in swing states would be won if you had policies, and it does seem like we're starting to see some of those policies that would actually benefit those people. But what would you tell the Harris campaign to be doing right now to say you can actually win some of these voters over?
A lot of what they're doing, but even deeper, because say, for instance, in Pennsylvania, the last election, the margin of victory was 40,000 votes, over 1.2 million or 3 million poor and low wage voters didn't vote. We're talking about people who care for us medically. We're talking about manufactured workers that work in a manufactured place, sleep in their car at night. We're talking about the white lady named Pam that I know who died in a high school parking lot when the lack of Medicaid in North Carolina expansion closed their hospital. So what you should do, these folks, 55 million of them, Alcy, want a living wage of at least $15 an hour, at least. And that's something we should do. It polls very high. They need health care. 80 to 87 million people are without health care or underinsured. They want to see voting rights because voting rights is the equalizer to the money and to the, all of the dark money. So they want to see the child income tax credit. They want to see the earned income tax credit. They want to see safety nets that allow people not just to fall through the cracks. And so everything we're talking about, not only is it the moral thing to do, but it's the moral thing to do because it's the right thing to do and the economic thing to do. It cost us more to let child poverty exist without fixing it. It cost us more not to pay workers a living wage. It cost us more not for people not to have health care. And again, Alcy, we're talking about, Rich, is the reason why we're reaching out to 15 million poor and low-wage voters through the campaign in a nonpartisan way to talk about issues. We're saying, you're talking about in some states, less than 3%. Every political campaign ought to have some ads and some radio ads and some mailers that say to poor and low-wage folk, if you vote for us and give us the Congress and give us the Senate, this is what will happen. And that can move what is needed to transform these elections.
Let me ask you something, though, because if you took away the identity politics, and people forget, you're with the Poor People's Campaign. Martin Luther King, when he was assassinated, he was dealing with economic issues, and he was making this point to white people and black people. Your problems are the same. The people to blame are the same. The people keeping you down to provide low wage labor are the same. And so what happens if you break that divide? Can we break it? And what happens if we break it?
Well, what happens if we break it? But let me say this, is how we break. We can still talk about race and have to, but we expand the conversation of race. And we show how those who engage in racialized politics to keep people down, those policies have a collateral damage. When Trump says or Reagan says what he says, it's not only racist toward the black woman, it's also dismissive of tens of millions of white people. So you get dismissed in the racial tropes. You get dismissed in the racial division. If we say no to it, then we can, when poor and low-wage white folk and black folk and brown folk and Asians and Native form together, we become what Celinda Lake said, the most powerful swing vote in the country, Allie. The largest swing vote with the most potential is 30 million voters. 30 million. 57 million of poor low-wage voters voted last time, but 30 million didn't. That's the largest potential swing vote in the country that could fundamentally transform who gets elected and the kinds of policies that are implemented after the elections.
Reverend Barber, one day it's going to come out when I'm doing research on you that you're an economist, because we have the best economic conversations. It's always good to see you, sir. Thank you for joining us. William Barber is the president and senior lecturer at Repairers of the Breach. He's the co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign. He's the author of White Poverty, How Exposing Myths About Race and Class Can Reconstruct American Democracy.
DJ Firefly, it's time for Couch Dancing on WRCT Pittsburgh. I'm starting off this show with Thierry David and the tune Ultrasonic Vibes from Lurie's Six Waves. You can see the whole playlist online at WRCT.org.